Welcome to Now Appalachia, hosted by author and Appalachian resident Elliot Parker. This show profiles the authors and publishers that have connections to the Appalachian region and how those connections influence and impact their works. And now, Appalachia.
And hello, friends. We welcome you to another episode and another edition of Now Appalachia, heard here on the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. We're delighted to have you with us once again today. I'm Elliot Parker, your host for the program. It is great to have you with us as we continue profiling the outstanding authors and publishers who are writing about Appalachia and have either called Appalachia home at some point or have strong connections to the Appalachian region and how that connection to Appalachia influences and impacts their work. And we have an outstanding author with us here today, Megan Holloway, to talk to us about her latest book. And we're also glad to be just shy of the campus of the University of Mississippi, otherwise known as Old Miss, where we bring you each and every episode of Now Appalachia. So we're delighted to be down here in Oxford, Mississippi, and delighted to be in the shadows of Old Miss and the University of Mississippi, however you want to refer to it. And we appreciate all of their support as we continue with our program here on Now Appalachia. Well, our guest today is an outstanding writer who has got a book that you have got to add to your to-be-read pile. As we tape this interview today at the end of June, if you're looking for a good summer read, we've got the book for you. The book is called Hunting Ground. The author is Megan Holloway. And she joins us today as a writer and a reader who found her first Nancy Drew mystery in a sun-dappled attic at the age of 8 and fell in love with the grip and tautness of a well-told mystery. She flew an airplane before she learned how to drive a car, believe it or not, and she also did her undergrad work in creative writing in the sweltering South and finished a Master's of Library Science and Information, a science degree in the blustery North. She spent a summer and fall in Maine picking peaches and apples. She also has traveled the world for a few years and even did a stint fighting crime in the records section of a police department. And she now lives in the foothills of the Appalachian Mountains. She is from Mississippi originally, and she has a standard poodle and spends her days as a scientist with the requisite glasses, but minus the lab coat. She's got the glasses, but she doesn't have the lab coat. And we're delighted to have her here on Now Appalachia to talk to us about her latest thriller, Hunting Ground, and what an outstanding thriller that is. And Megan, welcome to Now Appalachia. So glad to have you here to talk about your outstanding book. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Elliot, for having me.
You know, there's so much I want to get to about your book. This book is one of those books that really grabs you from page one and doesn't really let you go. But I know you got interested in writing this story based on an actual event that took place near a town called Brooklyn, Iowa, in July of 2018, and it involved a girl named Molly Tibbetts who went out for a run near her home there in Brooklyn, Iowa, and never came back. Can you talk a little bit about why that particular case got your attention, first of all, and how that led to the creation of your novel, Hunting Ground?
You know, it's one of those situations where women are always on the cusp of being a victim. I think a lot of women feel that way. And these cases that show up in the news highlight that so starkly. She goes out for a run, doesn't think that she won't come home that evening. It's just part of her daily life. And a lot of women face that. A lot of women have these situations where they are victimized. But what struck me as I was following the case of Molly Tibbetts was it's often white women who end up in the news and have these huge press coverages of their cases and these huge searches. And it's not always the case with women who are not white. And one of the research pieces that I came across when I was working on my undergrad degree and working on my thesis in a police department was the Urban Institute of Health, the Urban Indian Institute of Health's Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women, their case study. And that the numbers for that were just so staggering. And that was something that I really wanted to explore and highlight and try to raise awareness for.
Very good. Excellent. And I think that one of the things we see in your book especially is we have a very strong female character in Evelyn, who we follow at various points throughout the story. And we'll come back to her in just a second. Something that really caught my attention from the very first chapter of your story is how the setting is really its own character. And I know you set this story in Yellowstone Park in the wintertime. There were moments when I was reading your story that the writing and the descriptions of Yellowstone Park at wintertime were so wonderful and so rich and lush that I felt cold actually reading the book. And I started reading this back in March when it was still relatively cold. And even though I was all bundled up in my sweatshirt and sweatpants and had a blanket wrapped around me, I could feel the shiver in my body as Evelyn was describing the various locations there at Yellowstone Park. Can you talk a little bit about setting's importance in your story and what it is about Yellowstone Park at that time of year that when you're setting a story in that location at that time just can really make you just feel cold even if you're not there?
Yes. I visited Yellowstone National Park for the first time as a teenager in winter. My family and I went there for Christmas, and I was just enraptured by the landscape. I grew up in the South, so I didn't have this experience with these brutal winters where survival is not really guaranteed, and you're facing, I mean, it's literally a battle of the against the elements. And so I was so captured by that landscape and how it shapes life there that I knew I had to write about it someday. With Hunting Ground, with using this specific location as the setting, I really wanted it to bring out something about each character. There are three different protagonists. I wanted their interactions with the landscape to show you a little bit about each of those characters. And of course, as you said, I wanted the setting to be a character in and of itself. I wanted it to be play a role almost like an antagonist against the characters.
Very good. And you've got, as you mentioned, three different narrators that we follow. We have Evelyn, we have Jeff, who's up to no good, and we also have Hector, who's kind of the ranger slash sheriff slash law enforcement officer who kind of patrols this area. I wanted to ask you before we get into those characters specifically, that shifting of narrative, that shifting of narration in the story, where we start with Evelyn and then we go to Jeff and we come back to Evelyn, then we go to Hector and we kind of mix that in over the course of the story. In terms of setting that up, is that something you wanted to do in the original drafting of the book? Or was that something that just kind of came about as you wrote? And how did you write it in terms, did you write all of Evelyn's parts first and then all of Hector's parts and all of Jeff's parts? Or did you just kind of shift as you were drafting?
So Hunting Ground had a pretty extreme evolution from first draft to last draft. When I started, I knew that I wanted to capture those three different perspectives. I love writing in the first person. I feel like it just adds a lot of intimacy and depth to the character when you have such a narrow focus on their thoughts. And I knew that I wanted I wanted three different players in the story. However, when I first wrote the original draft, this was a very different story. This was a romantic suspense. There was a hero that was not Hector, but Evelyn and Jeff were still playing major roles in the story. When I finished writing the first draft, I knew I wanted to move more firmly into the crime fiction niche. And so I basically scrapped about 40,000 words and kind of went back to the drawing board. And that's when Hector came onto the page and really took over the story and made it his. I love seeing characters from different characters' perspectives. And so I really like that view that you have of the different narrators from each of the protagonists' perspective.
Very good. And I wanted to ask you about Evelyn because she's such a strong, resourceful character. And she really is, I think, more of the typical heroine that we have seen emerge in recent years, especially in crime and thriller fiction. And I wanted to ask you something that I've noticed as a reader over the years. I feel like that when you see women show up in the pages of crime and mystery fiction, they kind of either are the victim, They are the damsel in distress, the damsel in distress that has to be rescued. They're the femme fatale who's just kind of on a rampage to get revenge for some a deed that was done to them in the past. Or they're just there to maybe fulfill a romantic scene or a passionate love scene. Mm-hmm. You've done something totally different with Evelyn in that you've made her so strong and so resourceful. And there was one passage in chapter 4 that really caught my attention. And she's talking a little bit about kind of how she sees things and how she sees life and kind of how she views herself and really life kind of connected to her in a larger way. And I just wanted to read a passage of this and have you kind of give us some insight into this. And this comes from chapter 4. And I love when she's talking about loss and she's talking about memories and she's talking about the effects that memories have on us and how we can't shake loose those thoughts no matter how hard we try. And she says, "For months I had given it free rein. I had allowed it to perch heavily on my chest, stuttering my breath and making each heartbeat a struggle. I'd allowed it to fester like a wound left to rot until all I could smell was the stench of it and all I could taste was the bitter bile of it. I allowed it to fester until I forced myself from my sour bed and found 2 weeks had passed without me even realizing it." And there are so many moments in the story where we get that insight and that depth of perspective from Evelyn. And I think it's fantastic. It makes her so unique. But I wanted to ask you about that in terms of creating her as a character. Because she's so different from the typical types of trope female characters we see in crime and thriller fiction. How did that all come about for you in terms of equipping Evelyn with these characteristics that really make her an outstanding character to follow in your story?
I really wanted with Evelyn to kind of strike a match to that typical trope that female characters in crime fiction fall into. And I think since Gone Girl hit the charts, I think that women are allowed to be more than just good on the page. And I like exploring that depth of character that women don't just fit into a neat category. And oftentimes they might very well be a victim, but there's so much more than that. I have always loved strong female characters. And I love what they can bring to the page and how there's so much more depth that you can drill into with a character who does not simply fall into one specific type of trope.
And she seems to be a character too who, in terms of fulfilling or not fulfilling those tropes, as you're talking about, she seems to have a pretty good understanding of herself too.
She does.
I feel like a lot of those other tropes we were just talking about, it seems to be a man or another male character in the story tells the woman or tells the female character, "Oh, well, you this," or "you look at things that way." But we don't see that from Evelyn. She has a pretty good understanding of kind of her own personal strengths and weaknesses too.
She does. She is very self-aware. And I try to have self-awareness as a person as well. And so I feel like that kind of influences the type of female character that I write. It's funny, she actually evolved out of my own work experience in a museum, in the Denver Museum of Nature and Science. And I had such an amazing internship with them. I wanted to explore that kind of academic heroine a little bit more. And I had a lot of fun with that. But she's such a strong character. And as you said, she's so resourceful. And I really wanted to, you know, we're now writing in the Me Too era, and there's so much evolving in not just the crime fiction world, but the entire literary world now, that women are allowed to explore these different areas and allowed to be these different types of characters. And I really wanted her to be, I wanted her to be the hero of her own story.
Excellent. Megan Holloway is our guest here today on Now Appalachia. We're talking to her about her newest thriller. It's called Hunting Ground. It was released in June from Polis Books. And Megan, we'll come back to the book in just a second, but I thought we'd talk a little bit about you and kind of your background and your influences. We read just a few moments ago some information from your bio, which was interesting. You've had such an interesting life and career. I want to know how you ended up, first of all, flying an airplane before you learned how to drive a car. So tell us a little bit about that, and what did you learn from that experience in terms of being up in the air before you were behind the wheel of a vehicle?
So my dad and I used to go out for a drive every Sunday afternoon after lunch. And we would just explore all these different places. We live in an area where there's a lot of hills and ravines and lakes. And so we would just find a different road and drive down it. And this was, I was about 15 years old. So my dad was telling me how to drive at that point, but I wasn't actually behind the wheel yet. And so one of our Sunday outings, we drove past a small rural airport, and there was a gentleman out with his Cessna 172 Skyhawk. And we stopped and talked to him about his plane. And he said, hey, you know, would you like to go up? Are you interested in taking a flight? And my dad and I just looked at one another and we were like, yes, yes, absolutely. We would love to. It was funny. We got in the plane. We were about probably up in the air for about 30 minutes. And we told the pilot where our house was at the time. And we drove over, and I called my mother from my cell phone in the plane. And she was like, where are you guys? I was like, come out into the backyard. We're in the plane that's circling over the house right now. And so that was really the start of it. The pilot was an instructor. And so when we got back down onto the tarmac, he had let me sit in the pilot seat as we were flying. And it just really intrigued me. And I loved being up in the air. It was such an incredible experience learning how to fly. It was a huge challenge, but hugely rewarding as well.
And I know that you being from Mississippi and now having strong connections as to Appalachia, as you live in the foothills of the Appalachian Mountains now, we see those themes of Appalachian life in your work, especially in Hunting Ground, you know, small towns, rural areas, areas where people know everybody and know little secrets and pieces of information about everybody else, which is what you get oftentimes in Appalachian communities. Just your thoughts about living in Appalachia, being from Appalachia, and why does it seem like, and is it, that us Appalachians are such good storytellers?
I think it's similar to how the Irish and the Scottish just have that, almost like that strain of DNA, that storytelling is just woven into the culture itself. And I think we have always been storytellers. Sometimes that comes in the form of gossip and family rumor. But I think we have always had that inclination to tell stories and for that to be our medium of escape. Having grown up in the area, I was always heard stories from my grandparents' life as children in a very different setting from what I knew, a very different era where the culture was different and the just the entire worldview was different. And so I grew up hearing my grandparents' stories. And I can certainly say that those stories influenced my own and certainly shaped the person I have become and the storyteller I've become.
Excellent. Very good. And I know that you're a busy person too. You know, scientist, you have a poodle.
I do.
And I know having once had a poodle myself, I know how wonderful those dogs are, but how attentive they are and how much attention that they need. So you've got this active personal and professional life. How does your writing fit around that in terms of when do you write? How do you structure writing into your busy schedule? Are you a morning writer, evening writer? How does all that come together for you as you try to write sort of around the day-to-day life situations that we all have to experience?
I tend to be a morning writer, and I just am really diligent about setting routine and sticking to it. I get up, I take Aiden, my poodle, for a walk in the morning. We come back in, I get him situated with his breakfast, and then I sit down and I get my word count in for the day, and I don't do anything else until I've gotten that work done for the day. It's really a matter of just putting the words on the pages and making that a priority. And not, it's easy to come up with excuses of why you can't fit it into your schedule or why you can't get it done that day or the inspiration just isn't flowing. And I think it really comes down to just making it happen, getting those words on the paper, and then coming back and fleshing them out and shaping them.
Excellent. Great advice, too, for anybody who is struggling with that. And I know a lot of writers do struggle with that, both novice writers and veteran writers, trying to balance the writing time with yes. the day-to-day of everyday life. And so I think that's great advice for folks that need a little bit of encouragement and perspective on that. We've been talking with Megan Holloway here on Now Appalachia. Her latest thriller is out. It's called Hunting Ground. Polis Books is the publisher. And Megan, let's go back to the book for just a little bit. And we've talked a lot about Evelyn. We've talked a lot about the park being a strong character in itself as a setting for the story. But we haven't talked about Hector very much yet. And he's another great character who, in a lot of ways, is the polar opposite of Evelyn because he's older, he's more grizzled, he's kind of sardonic in the way that he approaches his job and sort of the things that he has to do. And we get a sense that he maybe is at the end of his career or retirement maybe somewhere down the road for him, but he finds himself pulled into this situation that Evelyn finds herself in. So tell us a little bit about Hector. And you mentioned earlier that he kind of came on later in the drafting process. So where did he come from, and what is it about Hector we need to pay attention to as we follow those passages where he's narrating the story?
Hector is really the key figure in this series. This is actually a trilogy. And so he ties the entire narrative in a three-part act together. He was so fun for me to write. I had entirely too much fun with my previous novel with the antagonist that I wrote for that story. And I realized that I really wanted to try to capture an antihero and to have him have the same end goal as a hero, but have that journey look very different, have his moral compass be one that you're not too sure that that really skews straight toward true north. And so he was a challenge to write. I actually have been surprised by how drawn people have been to his character, because I really was not, I knew I had a very strong feeling that character, that readers would love the character of Evelyn. I think she's kind of impossible not to root for because she's such a strong, resourceful heroine. But Hector was one that I was really not certain how readers would receive him, because he is this very cold and distant, a little bitter man who has had this life that you really don't know too much about. You know some of his backstory throughout the throughout Hunting Ground, and none of it really casts him in a very good light. And so he has this obsession that is driving him to find out what happened to his wife and daughter 15 years ago. They went missing one day. No trace of them has ever been found again, and he has been the main suspect. And so it was really kind of tapping into exploring a grief that has no end point, that has no closure, and you can't go through the whole grief cycle when there's this still open-ended question and this uncertainty and lack of knowledge about what happened and what happened in a way that you can grieve it. And so that was really, he was very much an experiment in psychology and an experiment to see just how far I could take a character and readers still be able to root for him.
Well, he's fantastic, and he's got all of those secrets, and he's hard on himself a lot
yes.
when he thinks about what happened to his wife and daughter, and he kind of blames himself for not being able to be there for them when they disappeared, and as you mentioned, find out what happened to them and where they mm-hmm. are right now, and why, you know, are they alive, and if they're not, where are they, and being able to bring them home and have that closure that you talked about. Mm-hmm. And one character we haven't talked about yet, we don't want to give too much away, is our antagonist, and that's Jeff,
yes. who,
for all of the chilly goosebumps that your setting made me feel as I was reading, Jeff made all the hair on my neck stand up for the creepiness that he brought to the story. Who is Jeff, without giving too much away, who is Jeff and what is he up to? And what is he trying to do? Because we see early on in the story, he's basically kind of stalking Evelyn from afar. So what is yes. he up to in the story, and sort of what is his role as the book unfolds?
Jeff was a very interesting character to write because he's someone who on the surface appears very charming and upstanding. People tend to trust him and seek him out because of that charm and that magnetism. But he is actually a much more twisted character than what is viewed on the surface. With his character, I really wanted to highlight, you know, there's this trend that the victim is always blamed in any kind of attack against women. And I really wanted to write a character that highlights the fact that this shame and blame is so misplaced, that this view of women and this violence toward women, his own psyche and from his own depravity.
Yeah, very good. And I wanted to ask you a question about that, because we've talked a lot about this in different ways on our time together today, and that is kind of where we see heroines and where we see female protagonists in crime and thriller fiction going. I certainly think about, you know, your character. I think about what you're doing with Evelyn. I think about the Kay Scarpetta character that has been created in recent years. I think a lot about a lot of different writers who are now starting to bring female characters into the forefront, not having them be one of those tropes that we were talking about earlier. And I'm wondering if you see that as a factor, because as writers, we are seeing that, and this comes from a variety of different influences, society and other areas too, but as a writer and as writers, if we're starting to see that we have so many strong, hardworking, prescient women in our society today, that we can kind of translate that over into fiction and make them have sort of the protagonist leadership roles that maybe they didn't have before. Or do you see that a lot as a writer? And I know you mentioned, you know, your experience doing some research and working with police records and law enforcement, coming across a lot of people. Is that something that we're probably going to see continue as we think about where are we going to put female characters in crime and thriller fiction going forward?
I certainly hope we see that more. I know as a reader, as a female reader, I look for that. And certainly as a female storyteller, I want to tell the stories where women are the heroes and where women can certainly play off of the male characters, especially in a series, in a trilogy where it is male pioneered. But I want to show that women don't simply fall into those tropes and are not simply relegated to the secondary characters, that they have their own heroic journeys and their own nuances.
Yeah, and I think that's also really interesting too, that you mentioned the nuances as we think about female heroines in crime and thriller fiction. We talked about Kay Scarpetta a moment ago. Lisa Scottoline certainly has done this with her Rosato and D'Annunzio, a female law firm that's in a lot of her books, where they aren't necessarily police officers, but they step out of that role of attorney and kind of are in that private investigator role. Mm-hmm. Also, you know, we've seen a lot of that. So I'm glad that you feel like that's a tradition that is going to continue, or is going to become a tradition and a trend going forward, because I think that really adds a lot of depth and richness to the kinds of characters we can see in crime and thriller fiction, and kind of moving a character who occupied those tropey sort of secondary roles into the forefront and make a story centered on them as well. So my next question, you kind of already addressed, and I'm very excited to hear. You mentioned that you're working on a trilogy here based on Hunting Ground.
Yes.
So where are you in that process? And is there any other projects aside from that that you're working on?
So I've actually already completed the two books that follow Hunting Ground. They are tentatively titled Hiding Place and Killing Field. And while Hector maintains his thread as a protagonist throughout, you'll see two different narrators in each book come along the sidelines with him. And each one features an antagonist and then a strong female character that is balancing out the story with Hector. The overarching story, of course, follows Hector's journey to try to find what happened to his wife and daughter 15 years ago. But I think that readers will really enjoy the side plots that the female characters bring to the stories.
So when can we expect, do you have any ideas roughly when we can expect book two?
So it should be sometime next year.
Fantastic. And you're sticking with Polis Books, is that correct?
Yes, I am.
Excellent. Very
good. They've been fantastic to work with.
Yeah, they really are a great publisher. And if folks haven't checked out your book or any of the other great books that Polis Books has been publishing here in the last couple of years, we had John Vercher on last year.
Three-fifths is amazing.
Oh, it's an amazing story. And he just won an award. I don't know if it was the Anthony Award or some award here recently for Best Debut Novel, one of the Crime and Mystery International Awards. And so I know Polis Books is doing your book and has done his book and is doing so many other great books as well. So, Megan, in our final moments with you today, if anyone wants to get in contact with you to talk to you about Hunting Ground or talk to you about writing in general or just getting contact with you in any way, how can they get in contact with you, number one? And secondly, where can they get copies of Hunting Ground?
So I am on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook at the handle A Megan Holloway. And you can also visit my website, meganholloway.com. I have a contact form there. I love hearing from readers and from those interested in the story. You can buy my books wherever your favorite bookstore is located. It's on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, and then of course through IndieBound you can get it at your local independent bookstore.
Fantastic. And I know that many of our authors have emphasized this, and we've emphasized this too as well on the program, that if you have a local independent bookstore in your community, please support them early and often, especially in these times with the pandemic going on, a lot of bookstores going through, independent stores especially, but all bookstores going through some changing times and challenging times because of quarantine and closures. They could certainly use the support and use the help. So Megan Holloway has been our guest here today on Now Appalachia. We've been talking to her about her outstanding new thriller called Hunting Ground. You need to add this to your summer or late spring or early fall or whenever it may be to be read pile, because this is a book that you will not want to miss. You will not be disappointed, and you will sit down and start reading. And next thing you know, 7 or 8 hours will have gone by and you won't know where you've been or what you've been doing other than being in Yellowstone Park with these great characters that she's created, Evelyn, Jeff, and Hector. So Megan, congratulations. It's a terrific book. All the best to you on that. And as the second book comes out next year, we'd love to have you back on Now Appalachia to talk about it. So thanks so much. Congratulations.
I'd love that. Thank you so much, Elliot. I appreciate it.
And we also want to take a moment as we finish up on this episode of Now Appalachia to give a special thanks to the executive producer of Now Appalachia. Her name is Pam Stack. She does all of the behind-the-scenes work for all of the podcast episodes that you listen to here on Now Appalachia, as well as the other podcast programs that you listen to on the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. We appreciate all of Pam's support and the work that she does behind the scenes to make these podcasts possible. So thank you so much, Pam. We couldn't do it without you. We also want to remind you that this is a copyrighted podcast that is owned and operated by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. That's going to do it for us this time. I'm your host, Elliot Parker. We'll talk to you again soon, and also remind you that hopefully you will stay well and that we will see you someplace soon, we hope.